Hey everyone, I'm here with Richard Reese, who is a meditation expert, an AI extraordinaire, an all-around good person. He's currently building 25 AI startups in how many weeks? In 50 weeks. That's one every 2 weeks, like popcorn. Thanks for laughing. That wasn't funny. That's a lot. That kind of reminds me of when I was in high school and I was so intent on getting into college that I was just doing everything. I was doing the maximum. Why are you building 25 AI startups in 50 weeks? What's going on?
What's going on in AI right now is very interesting, where suddenly there's this tool that allows you to increase your productivity. And I find productivity to be the most important thing, both for country and for individuals. This tool essentially allows me to get a lot more done in a shorter amount of time without needing as many people. So one example would be last website, we translated 2,000 pages to Spanish in less than a week, and it cost $20. Before these tools, that would have cost thousands of dollars. And that's just one example. I can give a lot of examples where something that I used to do before, now I can do in a lot shorter amount of time. When you see that those capabilities are increasing year after year, then you know this is something I should probably focus on. By making it public and by blogging about it every 2 weeks, it forces me now to get this done because fear of embarrassment is a huge motivator. That is why AI right now, and that's specifically why these 25 startups in 50 weeks challenge.
Would it really be embarrassing if you didn't build 25 AI startups in under 50 weeks? Who is watching you? Is it your parents? I don't think anyone 5 years from now is going to be like, hey, Richard, you didn't build 25 AI startups in under 50 weeks. You're embarrassed. I'm cringing. I'm going to post your... I don't think that's going to happen.
You haven't met my father. Actually, yes, because just by putting it out there, you build this little following and now people are watching what I'm doing every 2 weeks. And obviously there's the family, obviously there's all my friends. Everybody knows about this now. If I suddenly stop, the thing I hate the most will be people saying, hey, what happened? To me, that's a very strong motivator and I need these motivators. If I were just to do this by myself, just wouldn't get done. So that's why.
Are there any other motivators behind wanting to build so many AI startups besides learning AI and not embarrassing yourself in public?
Yeah, so my last challenge was to get my previous website, Most Recommended Books, to number one. After achieving that, I was left with thinking, what am I going to do next? And I still don't know what I'm going to do next. I like having a very concrete, specific goal. And I like having a leaderboard and climbing that leaderboard. That's what's most fun to me about work. Have an exact concrete goal, have a business and compete with people, win and become number one. And I don't have that right now. So it feels empty. So there's the exploration phase. And while I'm exploring, it's open-ended and I go between these two modes. So I'm just searching for the next big challenge that's going to take me 5+ years to achieve.
Richard, I have to ask, what were you like when you were a child? Gonna get into AI and Zen and all the stuff we talked about before, but tell me, what was tiny Richard like?
I wasn't popular in school. I didn't have friends. I was a little chubby kid. And I guess that is why I have this side of my personality right now that just enjoys competing and building stuff and winning. Tiny Richard is the one who started that. Because, you know, when things are good at home because your parents are fighting and things aren't good at school, the only thing you have is prove to people that you are good. I started playing chess in high school and I wanted to be the best and I became the captain of the chess team and that was like, okay, I achieved this goal. And then I wanted to be the best swimmer and I was one of the best swimmers in the south of Spain. The two guys above me were Olympic swimmers. This side of me has been going on for quite some time and it started with Tiny Richard because like pre-10 years old, things were pretty okay other than changing countries every 3 years. But right around 10, 11, something just started happening where it's like the thing that gets you into that flow state. That became mine. It's like set these hard goals that you're not sure you can achieve and then work super hard until you achieve them. And these are ever increasing goals, I should say. It's like don't start with a very hard goal that I don't know whether or not I can achieve. And then I just dedicate everything to that until I've achieved it.
How fun are you to play board games with?
Not very fun at all. There is that thing where like, I don't want to let people win. So if I go one layer deeper, especially in Silicon Valley, one thing that I had when I first moved to Silicon Valley was a lot of the great founders talk badly about competition. But then I found some tech founders who are very much like me. And that is what motivated me. That's the basic message of this whole competitiveness thing is basically that's what works for me. If I went a level deeper, I would say like find whatever excites you. Do that. And this just happens to be what excites me. And I only found out about it because I told you about the meditation retreat I did. During that retreat, one of the people there was this woman who is a full-time therapist. And I've never been to therapy, but I was like, oh, cool. So I have an expert here. So I would always go up to her and be like, okay, why am I sad right now? okay, why am I happy right now? What's going on in my head? And everything I'm telling you about, like, this came from my childhood or my parents or all that. I learned that through talking to this person, and now I can talk to you about it.
So competition is really what drives you to be successful. And being around competitive people is important to you.
More than competing, I enjoy winning. So I don't like if you and I are using the exact same technology or if you're just as smart as I am. I hate competing against those people. I like finding a certain advantage, in this case, a technological advantage, because I think that if you have a technology advantage, that is the most important aspect of competing and winning. If I look at Amazon versus Walmart, Amazon went all in on the internet. This is what allowed them to win because Walmart was not all in on the internet. And if you study history, a lot of these wars that we talk about, none of these war strategy books mentions how important technology was in the victory. If two sides are competing and one side has a technology advantage, the higher the advantage, the higher the likelihood that side will win. And that's what I enjoy. It's like a puzzle. It's finding what can I do to beat these people? Like, how can I use technology to my advantage? It's like figuring out a puzzle. Because if I'm competing with someone who's got the same capabilities as me, it's like sometimes they win and I don't like that. What can I use to my advantage that they can't? That's a lot of fun. That's what I most enjoy. The guy who created the company DeepMind, he wasn't the best chess player. Something that drove him was, instead of me becoming the best chess player, could I build the best chess engine? And that's what DeepMind did. So like AlphaZero, I think to this day is the best chess engine. Instead of him being the best chess player of all time, he was able to build the best chess player of all time. And this is something I'm trying to do with AI, is like, instead of me having to do everything and compete with everyone on an equal footing, can I build something that gives me that advantage to win? And that's very exciting. Like, there was crypto, there's VR, there's AR, but I think that AI has something special in that it gives you a way to multiply yourself and your capabilities.
If you were competing against a young child, would you let them win?
Yes.
I don't believe you. I think you're trying to sound good for the interview. Like, if you were playing a board game, an 8-year-old, like Climate Detectives, Open for Business, which is a science game that is designed to teach children science and math skills and climate change thinking. You can buy it on mightycuriousgames.com. If you were playing that game, stop laughing. Climate change is serious. If you were playing that against an 8-year-old, would you let the child win?
It's funny because I just spent the weekend with toddlers. I do have a bias towards, if it's a little 8-year-old girl, I'm much more nice because I have a little baby brother and a little baby sister. And with the little brother, it's like a mini me. It's always like, toughen up. But with the little girl, it's like, I'm super careful. Anything you want, don't worry. It depends on the child.
It's vaguely misogynistic. No, I'm just kidding. Not with his little sister. Yeah, I mean, if you let a girl win and then you don't let the boy win, I think that's a little sexist.
It's hard for me to be tough with my little sister. Maybe it's sexist, but I'm much more protective. Not sure why.
I was just teasing you. I don't think you're a misogynist just because you're from San Francisco and work in tech. Anyway, I don't want to talk about that. So actually, let's set the stage for my listeners, because I know you're an AI expert. I know you are a meditation guru. I know a lot of things about you. Can you just give my listeners a little bit of background as to who you are, how you got involved in tech, and why specifically you've chosen AI? I mean, we were talking about competition. There are a lot of things you can compete with people on. Why AI? What brought you to it?
So when I was 18, 19, I moved to LA and I started working in movies, so producing these low budget movies. And I did that until I was 24, 25. And I didn't enjoy it because I don't love the process of having to go through these layers of people in order to do something. That's what led me to Silicon Valley, because I can just sit at my computer, code something, put it out there. People like it, they'll use it. If they don't, they won't. I love that thing where you don't have to get anyone's permission to do something or to succeed. Hollywood is the complete opposite. So with studying AI is another thing where it's like, it's such a new field where no one has cracked this thing yet. No one deeply has crushed it with any of these companies. And I think that the field is so new that any one of us could be the person who makes a big impact. And that excites me. You can't do that in Hollywood without layers of permission, but in tech you can.
So 25 AI startups in under 50 weeks. Why do you need to build them so quickly? And also, have you mapped them out? Like, can you tell me what you're building? Can you speed run it for me as you are speed running building them? Talk really fast.
Now, the 25 AI startups is because there's a lot of different AI tools. Obviously, you know, like the OpenAI tools. There's 11 Labs, which is voice. There's Pinecone, which allows you to create vector databases. So my idea is, at each step, every week, learn one of these new tools and then build something using it. So my first tool was just using OpenAI's. The second one was 11 Labs, which was the voice thing. The third one that I'm building now is using vector databases. So that's why 25 startups. It's like, I can't tell you what the next projects will be because I just haven't learned those tools yet. But once you learn a new technology, you'll be flooded with ideas. Like, oh, okay, so this is how this works. I could build ABC and then I'll just build that and release it. That's why 25. It's just a way of speed running.
What AI startups are you building? Can you tell me about the 25? Have you planned them all out or are you just doing them as they come?
Kind of as they come. The next one will be a subreddit finder. So like every time I build something, I don't know where to promote it. I was looking for something that allows me to just type like, what is my product? And then it will tell me where to promote it. Luckily that didn't exist. So I built it and I'm launching that this Saturday. I don't know what's the next tool, let alone the next 22 tools, but basically through learning more stuff, I will get ideas.
I have an AI idea for you. I think you should make something where I can generate, I have to take this seriously. I feel like if I give you an idea, you might actually build it. What do I want? Okay. I think you should make an AI that determines if someone you're talking to has actually read the book they are talking about. People can be very tricky. One time I went on a date with someone and we were talking about books. And at the end of the date, he was like, yeah, I just book notes all of these. I was so mad. It's like telling someone, hey, I love Chinese food. And you talk to them. They're like, oh, I've only ever looked at Chinese menus. I don't know. So you could build an AI. You could build something that would tell if something is fake news or not.
I thought about that. I also like the idea of removing emotion from the news because the news can be very, they're trying to get a reaction out of you. So they will use whatever words are likelier to push you in whatever direction they want to push you in. I just want to get the facts. X thing happened in this place. And with AI, you could build something like that. The book thing. Yeah, my last startup was selling books, so I hope people read more books than just Cliff Notes.
Especially on dates. I was really mad. Don't lie to women, fellas. It's not a good look. My dog just barked. That's right, Wilbur. Growl. Growl at liars. So you are building these AI startups in a very short period of time. I have to ask, are you really doing a good job with each one, or is it just good enough? And do you think that matters?
Well, I don't think in the beginning it matters. You kind of just want to put something out there, see how people react, and then focus on that. These AI startups, it's like launch, wait a month or so. And if something starts resonating with people, then I will focus on that for the next few years. I actually stole that idea from Amazon because they launched 60 products. And out of those 60 products, about 4 of them succeeded. So I think that trying more things is a good thing, especially now that the tools make it so easy. So like I went from knowing nothing about AI to being able to launch a tool every 2 weeks. And yes, I'm just starting with the APIs, but by the end of this challenge, the idea would be I could build my own models and build products that don't use other people's tools. But frankly, it doesn't matter because ultimately it's like the user doesn't care what tools you're using. They just care if it's solving problems. 25 startups sounds like a lot, but it's just increasing the odds that you'll find something really cool.
So you're throwing spaghetti at the wall to see what sticks?
Pretty much.
All right. So I feel like lately I've seen a huge push on just putting things out without really finalizing them, you know, or even proofreading them. Honestly, Richard, I have to say, I don't know if I really like it. When I look at some things people put on the internet, even on LinkedIn, I'm like, did you read that over? Did you think about what you were saying? Whatever you put on the internet is there forever. Just tell me, what's your thought process around that?
Startups are different in that if you look at the first version of any big company, they aren't the super polished products. Just look on the Wayback Machine, the first version of Google, Amazon, Facebook. These were not really polished products. These were tests that the founders would run. And if it led anywhere, they would pursue that. If not, they would pursue something else. And I think that's the right approach for software. So like if you're making a car, it better be really well done. Or if you're making a phone, it better be perfectly polished. But in software, use speed and iteration as your best friends. You don't want to be a perfectionist because if you can move fast and keep iterating based on data, you'll grow very rapidly. But if you take a long time to iterate, your fast competitors will make you cry. So you have to just keep trying stuff and keep iterating. I was talking to one friend who has this huge blog and he told me that he wrote about 1,000 blog posts. I was like, 1,000? That can't be right. And lo and behold, his website does have about 1,000 blog posts. But out of those, only about 5-10 of them really exploded. Even with blogging, you just want to keep trying stuff and seeing what works and do more of that. You see that with YouTube. YouTubers. The biggest YouTubers are also the ones who put the most videos out there. And I think that's just a recipe for success. But if you're writing a book or a paper, you want to be careful with what data you're putting out there.
Well, speaking about being careful about what you're putting out there, we live in the age of information. Candid question. Are you making valuable things or are you just creating more noise? What do you think?
I don't have to decide whether I'm adding more noise. The market will decide. If I'm doing something that's valuable for someone, then I will make more money than I spend. That's the case. So I think I'm adding more value. And I think you can't build a good product if it's not valuable. Even things that people criticize, like social media, you're still bringing value to people. And that's what allows these companies to survive.
So speaking about noise, I know you spent 4 months at a meditation retreat. Just tell me, what was that like?
I always wanted to do a meditation retreat and I wanted to do a Zen retreat specifically. Booked a Zen retreat in Japan and then COVID happened.
What is COVID?
Back in my days. So I wanted to do the retreat in Japan and then COVID happened. I was sad about that. Basically had this Zen master to myself for 3 to 4 months. Honestly, it was just to increase my focus. But everyone kept saying the real juice is in the retreat. I said, okay, now that it's COVID and I'm going to have this Zen master to myself, I ended up staying 4 months because this is very specific to Zen, but I was trying to achieve something.
What were you trying to achieve?
Whenever you read about people's meditation retreats, they have this moment where they describe it as the greatest high of their life. There's a book I read, which I really read several times, called 10% Happier. This was a journalist, Dan Harris, and he had an issue with like PTSD and he had an issue with drugs. So he started meditating and he describes his first retreat. He had this transformative experience, which changed his life. And he, who used to be a drug addict, described as the best high of his life. And I was like, okay, what is this? I need to experience this for myself. I tried to do it in 3 months, but I couldn't. But then within the fourth month, I had that experience.
So you went to a meditation retreat to feel high?
You were going to say something like that. You know, call it ego death. That's basically the experience where you feel like you are gone and you're connected with everything. Hyper-present is like you're so present that past or the future just disappear and you're fully in the moment. Some people call it ego death. The thing here is this complete loss of yourself, which once you realize that there is no you, that there's only the world, it is the greatest relief you will feel. And it does change your life because everything else pales in comparison to that. You can get there with drugs. Drugs are also risky for several reasons.
Also illegal. Look, my podcast is PG, make a science game for children. No drugs. Continue.
I just want to let everyone know that I do not do drugs. I don't even drink. The meditation thing was something that I heard from people who do both. And I said, well, I can get there through just meditating and training my brain. This is great. Once you experience that, it never really leaves you. You can always go back to that feeling. And I find it very helpful.
So ego death. Did you experience a full ego death?
Yeah, I got close to it. I still remember I just looked up outside the window and it felt like I just wasn't there anymore. Your mind is totally at peace and you're just focusing on the present sensations. You're not thinking about yesterday or tomorrow. It's hard to describe the details, but millions of people have pursued this. So there's definitely something there. You know, I'm not religious, but this is the closest you're going to get to a religious experience. And you can see millions of people are trying to achieve it. So you can be sure that it's real. Obviously, my experience was very tame, but I just needed to get it once so I could understand what's all the fuss about. What are these religious texts talking about? That's the closest that I got to it. All I did was read spiritual or meditation books, and I just went fully into that mode, and everything just improved from there. If you look at my last sites before and after the retreat, before it's a straight line, and then after it just grew a ton, just because I learned about focus and relaxing and controlling my mind.
Can you tell me in under a minute how I can control my mind? No phone, no cheating, no cheating. It is totally cheating. You can't be a competitive person if you cheat. Can't be a true winner if you cheat, Mr. Competitive Person. Tell me, how do I control my mind in under a minute?
The two words that I have on my phone wallpaper are get objective. Always be as objective as you can be. My worst decisions were emotional decisions, right? My worst decisions in business and in life were emotional. But when I can get objective and see everything from a 40,000 foot view, and I can clearly see what's happening, the less emotional you become, the better your decisions. I think that's what meditation teaches you. It's like you can see your thoughts from a third person perspective. You're not just manipulated by your thoughts. You can clearly see, oh, okay, I'm thinking about this or I'm ruminating about that. And when you can do that, it allows you to make much better decisions. And that's what I think. So what I do, I have the words get objective printed out everywhere. Like it's my laptop background, it's my phone background, it's on walls in my apartment. It's just a reminder to not let my emotions guide my decisions.
All of my decisions are guided by my emotions. It's not a joke. He says, I know. It's really not. But I feel like when I follow my emotions to make decisions, I am the happiest because I trusted my instincts. Pretty sensitive, I would say. I feel like it's obvious to everyone who listens to my podcast. I'm really sensitive. When I feel something, that shows me what I need to do, where I need to go, who I need to talk to. That guides me. So get objective. Do you let feelings come into play in any decision you're making?
When you say you let your emotions, I just want to differentiate because when I say my emotional decisions are bad, it's kind of like when I'm going through a heartbreak and I think I should just text her. Those are usually wrong decisions. You know, this is like a personal example that everyone's been through. But in business, it's the same thing. It's like a competitor copies you, does something, and you're like, oh, I should just do the same thing. These are bad. Like these emotional decisions are bad. I don't think that instinct is a bad thing. I actually feel like your subconscious is more powerful than your conscious. My best ideas don't come from me sitting at the whiteboard. You know, if I'm struggling with a bug or something, or I have a problem that I need to solve, and I'm at the whiteboard trying to write it down, trying to solve it. If I meditate or go for a walk, suddenly it just, I don't know where it comes from, but the answer appears. There's something to meditating, and when you let go of your conscious mind and you let your subconscious mind take control, these can be good decisions. But if you do something emotionally because you're like sad or worried or stressed, I think that you make a lot of mistakes, or at least speaking for myself, I make mistakes, which is why get objective is what helped me achieve the things that I wanted and stay away from the things that were hurting me.
Yeah, I do everything with emotions. I just found that's me as a person when it comes to things related to business. I mean, we're not really in the same business spaces. Most of my work is very creative. I'm not really taking things or selling things to people in the way you are. So maybe it's a little different. Do you see AI as helping us to become calmer and more focused on the present moment or less happy?
Definitely calmer. AI will help bring inner peace. AI will bring an algorithm that will make the decisions. So instead of emotionally thinking, oh, I feel like having pizza today, eat based on what the data says. I think that it will just multiply that, right? Like for all your decisions, what should I eat today? What career should I graduate in? Or what should I do today for optimal happiness? What decision should I make at work that will give me the best results? Instead of me by myself having to make these decisions, having these tools make these decisions for you will be incredibly helpful and will really increase human happiness. I see this even with my business. So I'm not a designer. I don't know anything about growth hacking. An algorithm or an AI or a tool that has had more data than I could absorb and can make these decisions and helps me become more successful. So multiply that by every human and multiply that by every decision you will make. You'll have a recipe for way more human happiness.
Really? Because as far as I can see, AI is making a lot of people very unhappy. A few people, maybe a little happier because they're saving money. But yeah, my friends who are artists, they've been replaced by Midjourney. I'm not kidding. It's like a real thing. Decimating the industry. AI might make so many industries just obsolete. Do you really feel like it's increasing our happiness and our inner peace? I don't see the congruency in that.
I'll tell you from my personal experience. When growing most recommended books pre the AI tools, I would have to hire on platforms like TopTal or Fiverr. And it cost me thousands of dollars over the years hiring these people, tens of thousands over the years hiring these people for most recommended books. Whereas now with my AI startups, I can do the same amount of work for pennies. And had I had these tools, it would have taken me 2 years instead of four. That designer was doing the same thing to potentially hundreds of other businesses. And all those businesses would have had a higher shot at success if they had spent less money on these things. So for every one Fiverr designer you hurt, you help hundreds of other businesses and startups. And these startups hire other people. If you build a product that brings value to people's lives, you will make money. If these startups are survived, clearly they're creating value. So for every one designer you hurt, you're increasing the odds of success for many people like me who are building these tools and businesses.
These AI art-based startups, they've stolen art from artists and from designers. They're not getting compensated for their work, essentially just pulling a huge amalgamation of art, not compensating the artists. It's displacing thousands. And the people it's making richer, I feel like, already have a lot of money.
I can only speak for myself again. Yes, it benefits the people who build startups and run businesses, but it also benefits all their users and all their customers. So I see it as net good.
What would you say to someone who would say, I think you're being selfish, or I think you're being a techno-optimist, AI is going to hurt a lot of people?
When I started my business, I was sleeping friends' couches because I couldn't afford to get my own apartment. I almost didn't make it because of those high costs. And now that these tools are helping me, and I'm saying, wow, these tools are great. Had I had them, you know, maybe I wouldn't have had to sleep on the couch for a year. So I might get pushback, but I'm just speaking from my experience.
All right. So young Richard, sleeping on a couch, no money, eating ramen, microwaved.
Good ramen. Interesting days.
You know, you went from nothing to being successful. Have you donated money? Have you made any kind of effort to pay it forward?
I thought about doing this with Most Recommended Books, which is, what's that website where you can donate money to schools?
Like every website ever? Like ever, the government website. Literally go to any elementary school website. There is a spot for you to donate money.
I did it once and it was great because all the kids wrote me little letters and they still have those letters. That made me super happy and I want to do more of that. But I want to find a way to automate it for most impact. I want to find a way to really do it right.
You could make an AI tool for it.
Ding, ding, ding. I've been thinking about that.
How easy is it to build these startups?
It's not that hard. The building itself, the tools are just getting better and it's just getting easier. But then if I gave you the coding skills, what would you build?
I remember reading Hercules, the 12 Labors. You know, when the Hydra has its head cut off, more heads come in its place. And pretty soon you've got this big, big monster with a ton of ugly heads looking at you. Honestly, when you talk about how easy it is to make AI startups and how they're all spawning from each other, that's what it reminds me of, like a Hydra. It freaks me out.
Does it freak you out though? Because like these services are really fun. TikTok's really fun. Instagram's really fun. The more AI, the more fun. And the better for you, right? Because as a consumer now, instead of paying a lot of money for a service, you pay a lot less. I saw one app that allows you to do songs and it's pretty good. You just write the lyrics you want and you say what type of song you want. So like country music or rock music. So I find these tools more fun than scary. Like my experience in Hollywood, I didn't like it because it's too many people involved. Now with these tools, Sora, it gives you 60 seconds of any shot you want. Do these things by yourself now. And that to me sounds more fun, not scary like the Hydra.
It freaks me out. I feel like AI, it's raising children to be consumers, to be focused on just producing the most of something and not focusing on the quality. I mean, okay. So when he was, I forget if it was elementary or middle school, he made a movie by microwaving something and it exploding. And then he filmed it and pretended like it was death, like blood and guts. AI, it's going to let kids actually do that. Do you feel like there's any level of creativity that gets removed? I mean, you're not really thinking about how to make something. You can just type it and it happens.
See that increase creativity? Because the only thing that prevents from getting the exact shot he wants is reality, right? With these tools, that constraint is gone. I don't like limitations and I don't like asking for permission. And with these tools, any kid in Africa, where I come from, any kid in Africa can like make a cool movie that, you know, you don't have to come to Hollywood and you don't have to befriend the right people to make something really cool.
Do you think everyone's content is going to start to look the same? I mean, you see women and even sometimes men now walk around with Instagram face, which is where they, you know, technically their faces are perfect. They look really good on camera, but they look a little uncanny valley in person. You see them, you're like, where are the wrinkles? Where are the smile lines? Where's the expressiveness? Do you think that once everyone has access to the same tools, all the content is just going to start to bleed together and not be interesting anymore?
I think things will be more unique because the constraints are gone, right? I think that the better biotech or AI or any of these tools get, the more you will get to be whatever you want to be, look whatever way you want to look or work in whatever you want to work in. I think this will increase uniqueness and not decrease it.
Questions about that, but are you afraid of AI? even just a little bit.
Whatever OpenAI and DeepMind are trying to do, and they're trying to build the AGI, I think the faster they do it, the better it'll be for everyone. Because I have a very strong belief that every problem can be solved with knowledge. So whatever problem you have, it's only because you don't have the knowledge to solve the problem. Every bad thing that happens because of a lack of knowledge. So if you look at all the civilizations that would attribute their droughts and diseases to divine punishment, it's only because they didn't have the knowledge about irrigation or medicine that we do. And the more knowledge increases, the better things get for everyone. Having these AI tools will just help us get there, because we might have run into a fundamental limitation of human brains. So like, if we haven't solved the problems that we're currently dealing with, it's just because maybe we've reached some sort of plateau where these problems get very nuanced and very complicated, so much so that it's harder for us to come up with solutions. Physics has not evolved much since the 60s because of this, because the problems are getting harder and we're still the same humans. We'll be able to solve those problems. This is why I don't fear AI even a little bit. I know that some people talk about AI bringing doom to everyone, but I just don't know. I don't know enough about that, and I see no evidence that that would happen. And also, I choose my problems based on how much agency I have over them. So you have like your individual problem, and then you have your community problem. And eventually, the last level is a civilization problem, which could just kill everyone. I don't spend much time thinking about the national problems or the civilization problems, because for every 10,000 news items, the number of items that I have agency over is maybe just one. If I can't make a difference to that specific issue, I won't spend too much time worrying about it. Like I said, 4 years ago, I was only worried about myself sleeping on the couch. That was just individual problems is all I was thinking about. Now I help my family, and now community problems, but I'm still on that level of me and my community. I haven't reached that my business is so big that now I have to think about national problems or civilizational problems. Why would I spend any time worrying about those when, you know, I already have these problems to deal with that I actually have all the agency over? Why think about the problems I have no agency over?
It's kind of hard not to think about the problems you don't have any agency over.
I don't watch the news because of that. Because I think that they're trying to maximize worry. And if I just spend a whole day not looking at the internet, I don't think about any of these problems, right? So like, I still have the same problems that I have to solve. At this, the level that I'm at, it doesn't really make a difference whether I know societal problems or spend too much time thinking about them or not. I grow my level of thinking about problems the more my capabilities increase.
Yes, once you've learned to think, you can't stop. It's not funny, it's true. Once you learn to think, you can't stop. It's an Alan Watts quote. So, you've got quite a few built or in the works, and you know, it's really tempting to want to try all of them. I looked at the AI hypnosis app. Speaking of thoughts, can I try it right now, and will it help me achieve eternal peace? Internal peace. Both, eternal and internal peace. Like, I want that. Can you build something that would help me achieve both of those things?
Meditation. I said meditation, I meant it, because obviously your mind is thinking about 1,000 different things at once, and usually things you don't have control over. Whereas hypnosis is more, it's not about quieting your mind or your thoughts. Hypnosis is like, I want to quit smoking.
I want to quit thinking.
Oh, that's impossible. You're always going to think. And meditation isn't about not thinking. It's more about observing your thoughts objectively. Once you think about, oh, I'm meditating, I'm wasting time, blah, 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 you'll learn to see that thought as just a thought. And then you'll see every thought as just a thought. And the more you see your thoughts in that way, the less power they will hold over you. As for the AI hypnosis app, if you want to do something or stop doing something, I would say tangible, like I want to focus more. Hypnosis helps with that, because basically what it does, it just repeats the same thing, and then you listen to the hypnosis every day, and eventually you'll learn through so much repetition, you think like, okay, maybe I shouldn't eat the cookie, or maybe I shouldn't do this thing. And that's hypnosis. It's just guiding your mind in that direction. And meditation is like, you can observe your mind, an objective perspective.
AI hypnosis is something you're building, but it's not going to help me stop thinking. Look, okay, you just showed me the meditation. I know what meditation is. I've tried it. I've done the guided meditation. Honestly, I think I might just need a lobotomy. That's a joke. Don't give me a lobotomy. You know, my neighbor is a hypnotist. This app you're making through AI for hypnosis. What if you end all the hypnosis jobs? Once this technology gets advanced enough, it is not out of the question that an AI project someone makes, I mean, if it's good enough and they work hard enough at it, could displace entire industries. And what's so interesting about this to me is when I talk about the impact of AI on jobs to people, their answer is always, oh, it'll happen to everyone but my industry. Are you kidding me? You're the first ones that are going to be gone. You're truck drivers. Richard, I don't think it's going to be so pretty. I just don't think it's going to be so good for our world or our society. But that's just my viewpoint. What progress do you think AI will bring to our world? And does every innovation actually represent progress?
If you think about yourself and you say, I want to solve this problem that I have. If you have that problem and you want to solve that problem, you're going to have to give your neighbor, the hypnotist, over $1,000, depending on how many sessions, right? So if it's like 12 sessions, it's over $1,000. Many people can't afford that. And that brings a lot of pain to those people. For every one hypnotist that will suffer, you're going to get these hundreds or thousands of people who will benefit because now they can get great hypnosis because these apps will read or these AIs will read more books about hypnosis. They'll be much better at constructing scripts because right now you might hire a hypnotist, but you don't know if they're good or not. Once you build the best hypnotist in the world and anyone can afford that hypnotist for $10, you'll benefit thousands, maybe millions of people for every one, you know, like one hypnotist that you have hurt. And now multiply that by every other service you pay for. It probably will take my job, right? It doesn't take much imagination to see how that would work. So I do think that there's a possibility there. But what I'm doing, again, back to the agency thing, is like, instead of just worrying, I'm fighting back so that I don't end up on the short end of that deal. You know, there's a risk for all of us. But if we can adapt and use these tools, really master these tools, and it's not that hard, then we will not be at the mercy of the effect. That's all I would recommend people worrying about, is the problems, again, that they have agency over. I know that it is hurting a lot of people, but again, like, these tools could hurt me as well, and maybe they will in the future, but I'm doing everything I can so that's not the case. And I think that that's all that anyone can do, right? It's like a shark. You keep moving or you die.
So I should just stop worrying and learn to love the robot.
When you say, I can't ask questions. So when you say you should stop learning, stop worrying and love the robot, how much has the robot hurt you? I will add to that it can actually benefit you and you can get more work done, not less. Like, you could translate all your podcast episodes to French, Spanish, all these other languages and probably increase your reach, you know? So there's a lot of good to these tools, and learning to master them could benefit you if you stop worrying and embrace the machine.
Love the machine. Hand over all my data to the machine. Give the machine my soul. Is it hurting me? Not in the way you're thinking. I mean, I've not lost my job due to AI. I would say it's an interesting question. Is AI hurting me? Yes, and I'm going to explain how I feel about it. So we see so many American students right now outsourcing fundamentals of learning, of reading, of writing to ChatGPT, to softwares. That is not a good thing. People are like, oh, they're going to have so much more time. Time to do what? Make shoddy products and watch TikTok videos. I mean, I'm very fortunate that education was so important to my mother. You know, growing up, she really forced reading and writing and being very honest academically and not cheating. And I have really benefited from that as an adult, right? You know, being able to read and think critically. That really comes from repeated exposure to books and to writing when I was young. There are children now who are putting things into ChatGPT. That's not learning. All you are learning how to do is put stuff in boxes, is how to click buttons, is how to do things very quickly. And then, like, I'm guessing there are some teachers who are pushing back against it, but most of them just don't have the energy or time. I think we're watching the fabric of our society slowly unravel. And I think all these shoddy, cheap AI products that let people do things high scale, replace jobs, not spend time on it, I don't think it's a good thing.
I do have a book recommendation, Ian Banks' Culture series. It gives an interesting view of where humanity could be if we just embrace the machine, become one with it. Because like I said, the problems that you're talking with education and jobs, if we haven't solved those problems, it's because we don't know how. And by bringing AI into the mix, it can figure out solutions we cannot.
The solution is to ban TikTok. Kids are addicted to it. You see these little children walking around like robots with their eyes glued to their phones, and they're just putting all of their homework into ChatGPT systems. They're not doing any real work. What do you think these kids are going to be like when they are adults? I just don't think it's good. I think, honestly, if I were president, which I'm not, and I can't be because I'm not a tall man with a giant watch, I would ban TikTok and I would run over every child's smartphone with automated tracks because, you know, all the trackers will be automated. And I would make all the kids just play outside and not get screens. That's what I would do.
Think about kids doing their homework. You have to ask yourself, why are they doing their homework? What's the purpose of homework? The reason they're doing their homework is so that they can get a job. And I think most of what I learned in school was not super valuable. So like I said, I grew up in all these countries. And when I studied in France, I spent an enormous amount of time having to memorize which king married which queen from which country and which war happened when. I had to memorize the names of different countries geographically in different languages. I had to memorize the periodic table in three different languages. Most of that I don't use today, right? And I'm guessing you grew up in America.
I mean, I go to CVS after Valentine's Day to buy all the candy that has been marked on sale. I wait in lines patiently. I love capitalism. Yes, I'm American. I grew up here. Very American.
So a lot of the things that kids here are also learning, they're learning about the founding fathers and the Civil War. And when I would go to another country, like when I went from France to Spain, in France, France is the center of the universe. You know, we have Napoleon, we have the Paris, we have the best food. And then I moved to Spain. We don't care about Napoleon. It just showed me how much BS goes into the things that we spend a lot of time learning in school. The things that were most useful to me were math, because no matter where I went, math remained the same, and reading and writing. But a lot of what they tested me on, every country had a different test. I thought, why am I spending the time to memorize the things from country A if then all the kids in country B are not spending any time learning these things? So it's like, why are these things important if there's 150 other countries where they don't care about these things? And that really affected me and the way I thought about what I was doing in schools. And so I spent most of my time studying math because it was the one true thing, one true topic. So when you say the kids are now using ChatGPT to do their homework, I would focus on like, what are the core essential topics that are immutable and teach those to kids, because a lot of what they're doing now is not going to serve them, especially if they travel. But even if they stay here, don't you still use from what you learned in high school?
There's this book I love called Anti-Intellectualism in America, and it talks about that. And I mean, most of what I learned in high school is not necessarily practical. They don't necessarily make me tons of money, but they did teach me how to be a problem solver, how to think critically, how to respond, how to present myself, how to defend myself, how to make arguments. Those things are all valuable. If we're just going to teach kids skills that could make them money, sure, coding, selling, that's just life, I guess. But school, I feel like, is valuable for things other than how to make money.
I don't think how to make money is the meta skill that people should learn. I was just saying that most of the things that I learned in school in four or five different countries are things that were not relevant. You know, like math was relevant, physics was relevant, but history, geography, literature, they kept changing from country to country, right? So if they keep changing and they occupy a large chunk of the school curriculum, I question the core value of these things. And I don't think there's no value to literature, right? Like, I enjoy reading. But are these the things that kids should be learning?
All right, so maybe they change country to country. Well, if you are living in France, Napoleon is more relevant than if you are living in not France. But I mean, kids should be learning these things. They're teaching them how to be citizens in the country they're in. So if you stayed in France your entire life, things you learned about French history and culture would be more relevant to you.
Core thing I was getting at was the criticism of kids using these AI tools to do things like their homework. And what I was trying to get at was more at, if they're using their AI tools to do that homework, then is it that valuable? If the AI can do it for you, a lot of the things that you learned in school 100 years ago, you wouldn't learn today. And my intuition there is that the things that don't change, the evergreen topics like math, will still be taught. And most of the things that are being taught will just fall. I think there's some value in literature. I don't think everyone should learn how to code. If I have a kid tomorrow, what are the things I would really encourage them to learn? And I don't think coding would be one of them. What are the topics that I think would give them a better brain?
Yeah, I have many thoughts and opinions on what kids are learning and what I think is valuable, but we don't have time for that. So we're going to go back to AI. Going to swing it back to AI. What do you think about how humans are trying to maximize and optimize their existence? And do you think it's healthy to delegate your happiness and your well-being to AI systems?
Back to the agency thing, like just do whatever works. I look at books like Moneyball, where they delegated picking the players based on their stats, based on data. And I found that interesting because then they became a really good team. I think that delegating your decision-making to an algorithm that has your best interest at heart because you built it or someone you trust built it is a great thing. Because as a human, I'm fallible. And like I said, my emotional decisions were not my best decisions. That's different from my intuitive decisions. When I'm being emotional, I'm usually making the wrong choices. And I would love if I had a Fitbit that told me, you're feeling quite stressed right now. Are you sure you want to send that text message to that person? Or you're feeling sad. Are you sure you want to eat that burger right now? Like, I would love to have something that improves my life by tracking my state, because I don't think that our best decisions are made emotionally. Intuitively, yes. Your subconscious is incredible at coming up with good ideas. Emotionally, it's like, I think a lot of mistakes are made in that way. And I think that delegating that to an algorithm that has way more data points about you and will tell you, maybe you shouldn't do this, maybe you should do that. Yes, it would increase human happiness. If you want to lose weight or if you want to sleep better, you probably could build something that helps you get there faster and will make better decisions than you would by yourself make.
You know, I think it's a little creepy. Do you feel like you're releasing your agency to an outside system by doing that? Everybody knows when you're sad, you shouldn't eat a hamburger, but they still do it. I mean, do you really think an AI system is going to stop someone who says they're going to do it? Like, is it going to deliver you a shock? It's like you put on the system. It's like, oh, you want a hamburger when you're sad? Shock. You want to text your ex when you're angry or sad? Shock. Don't send that email. Shock. I mean, just put them in the AI gulag. Is that what you're making?
If you're looking for funding for that shock idea, I'm down. Now, I don't think it would say shock. I will tell you, you ate the burger today and all your markers went down. What are you doing? You have the tangible data saying, here it is. I think if you apply that to all areas of your life where now you're tracking everything and it will show you like, hey, Paige, all these parts of your life have improved, you'll be likelier to take the suggestion when the AI says, don't eat that.
I think it kind of takes the fun and the romance out of life. Like, you get the metrics. I just look at my life. Am I feeling happy? Am I enjoying the people I'm around? Am I enjoying the way my body feels? That's all I need. I don't have to look at a metric system to know that I want to be in shape. I don't have to look at a metric system to know that sleeping well makes me happy. And honestly, looking at those little numbers stresses me out. I don't even check the metrics for my podcast because it takes me so out of my creative process. I don't want to have access to this stuff. I don't think it makes me happy, and I don't think it's generally a good thing for people to be able to measure every aspect of their life, but I feel like I'm actually in the minority on this here.
I just want to point out, I'm not maximizing. I don't track my sleep. I don't track my biomarkers, but I think it's because I'm optimizing for something totally different than happiness or health. I'm optimizing for career success. I don't have much of a social life or a love life or a family life. Just focus on work. Using that data was just one example of where it allowed me to just confirm that I was doing the right thing. Because I thought, oh man, I'm sleeping on the couch. Like, is starting a business the right thing for me? Am I built for this? I was like, maybe I should get a job. And then I take the Big Five test. And on the score of agreeableness, I was very down. I was in the 0% hour. Getting a job is just not in the cards for me. You don't like being told what to do. You like working hard and you're very competitive. And I said, okay, a business is... It gave me confidence when things got really difficult. And that came from those data points. And I think those data points, for anyone to know themselves better, will help you make the right decisions. They'll say, like, maybe you shouldn't be an artist, or maybe you shouldn't be a lawyer. You're very creative. So maybe a legal job is not for you. And I think that knowing that about yourself would actually make people happy. It's a bit like taking these personality tests will tell you what work you should do. Who are the people you should be around? Who should you date? Who should you marry? I think knowing more about yourself and the people around you will actually help you be better or be happier. It doesn't sound romantic, but I mean, I lived in Hollywood and I had a lot of friends who wanted to be the next Matt Damon. And it was sad to see it just didn't happen for them. These emotional choices that they make might have been the wrong choices. And maybe if they knew themselves better, hopefully these tools will help do that. It would have saved them a lot of sadness and heartache. I think we should go more in that direction. More data. Know yourself better. And what does it mean to know yourself better, right? It's like so hard. And none of these personality tests are 100% accurate. But they're getting more and more accurate. I would recommend taking 3 of them and then consolidating the data and seeing what did they all say in common. Because if one test says you're creative, if another test also says it, maybe a creative career is the right choice for you. I don't see how that would make people more sad.
Well, what if sadness and heartache is part of the journey? I mean, all right. So, you know, when I was in college, I was in a liberal arts honors program called Plan 2. It's very small. And I remember taking this test and looking at what my skills were. And there were a few things that I got that I would be good at. And one was psychologist. And that was what everyone around me told me I should do, is what I really believed that I would be good at. And when I started a PhD program in psychology, I found that in schools, I wouldn't say I was really good or really bad at it. It just wasn't really what I envisioned myself doing. When I started working in a hospital for kids with very severe developmental disabilities, I was a star at it. I was so, so good at connecting with and working with kids with severe developmental disabilities. It wasn't good for me, right? I lost a ton of weight. I was just really unhappy. Like, it was not what I wanted to do with my life. But I feel like if I had taken like an AI test, it would have looked at my disposition and my skills and gone, Paige, this is what you should do with your life. I knew in my heart when I was in school that I wanted to have a more creative career, but I didn't listen to that. I listened to the tests I was taking. So all I'm saying is, you know, life is funny. Life is interesting. I just don't think you can ever outsource your life to a system and have it be successful.
So the answer is more data, not let's put the tests aside. It's how can we make them better?
No, what I'm saying was that was an invaluable experience in terms of what I wanted to do with my life. I was working in this hospital with kids with severe developmental disabilities. That's what led me to making climate detectives, because I wanted to help solve an environmental problem. That was a way I could do it. Also, the experience I got learning from those children and seeing how lucky I was, for me, it was a very invaluable experience. And the process of learning who you are and what you're good at, I think, is a rite of passage that helps us to become better people. If you start off life and you're 23 and you're given the career that you're best at, you never have to struggle or learn. People are already insufferable when they're 23. Do you really want to give them like, oh, this is what you're good at? You never have to struggle. You never have to suffer. What are you going to make up like 1,000? I can't name any names without being offensive. You want to make just 1,000 people who are just self-satisfied and they've never had to struggle or go through what it feels like to be good at something, but not want to do it.
I think that even if you're good at your job, you will struggle. If you're good at the job and you care about the job, you will struggle. You'll just struggle harder than someone who's not good at it. And you'll solve the problem. It'll be a net positive. It's not going to be an easy ride. The top doctors and the top lawyers struggle.
Will you make an AI system for joy and happiness?
One thing I learned from meditation and speaking to a Zen master for 3 months is that joy is not a permanent state, right? It's like when you ask someone, are you happy? It depends on when you're asking, right? Happiness is not a permanent state. It just depends on when you ask. Take a step back and get objective, because there will be a day where you will give everything to be back here. And if you can always keep that in perspective, it helps you be happy. The present moment is where you will find happiness. After the meditation retreat, I was like, no, I have to like, here I am. I'm worrying about all these things. Like, they're all life. Joy is knowing like sad days will come. How can I minimize the sadness?
I'm sure I could build a system that can take better decisions than I can. And it would tell me, Richard, eat this, don't do that. You know, and hopefully it'll make me more joyful. I joke about this, but I would love to moneyball my life. It's like, make every decision based on data. What should the name of this website be? What should I eat today?
I would love for these trivial questions to be answered by someone who's more knowledgeable than my feeble little brain at that moment in time.
There's so much joy that comes from that. Like, oh, you wake up, you're excited. I get to pick. I get to choose. Like, what am I going to drink today? A latte. I'll make it myself. So yeah, I do. George says I make a good latte. Yeah. Don't outsource it to a machine. Oh my God, if I woke up and the thing was like, to maximize happiness, you're going to need to go to the park for 30 minutes and drink this latte, I would enjoy it. I like to make my own schedule and my own life and my own enjoyment. So what if I'm going to feel really good if I eat eggs in the morning?
Don't delegate the things that make you happy. Think about the decisions that don't make you happy. Filling your taxes. Think about those and delegate those. If it makes you happy, why would you change it and optimize it? I'm not going to delegate bug solving or coding or the parts that I really enjoy of my work, designing the leaderboard and picking my enemies.
All right, well, we are coming up on time. I just got to ask, Richard, got all these systems, all these ways you're optimizing your life. Are you having any fun?
I would say most of my time is happy because I've designed my life. But again, no social life, no love life, no family life. I have the next 50 weeks already laid out and I enjoy it. I just designed what works for me. And it took a meditation retreat, but it worked. You know, it's like design whatever brings you joy on the day to day. You're going to have bad days. Whatever can maximize your happiness. And I don't optimize every area. I know it sounds like I do, but I really don't. I just optimize for work. One area. I think we should just focus on one thing at a time. First work, then one day I'll focus on have a family, then one day I'll focus, you know, it's like philanthropy or whatever. Like, I think that one thing at a time works better, at least for my personality, than trying to do several things at once. So I'm happier when I get to just have one focus, achieve it, and then pick the next goal. There's a good book that I would recommend. It's called The One Thing, Gary Keller. I read that right after my meditation retreat.
Well, I will check it out. Thank you so much for coming on my show, Richard.
Thank you for having me.
Bye, everybody.